Are you ready to perform at your highest potential? Welcome to the Performance Matters podcast from GP Strategies, your talent transformation partner. In each episode, we'll interview industry experts and explore best practices and innovative insights to help your organization improve performance.
Hello, and welcome to the Performance Matters podcast. I'm your host, Michael Thiel. Today, we're diving into a topic that's shaking up the foundations of instructional design. And it's not just a tweak to the old playbook. It's a full-on molecular makeover. Here's the big idea. What if learning wasn't built in courses, but in much smaller units? What if AI wasn't just a tool, but a co-creator? And what if learners weren't passive recipients, but active architects of their own development? Joining me today is someone who's not just asking these questions, he's answering them. Matt Donovan, Chief Learning and Innovation Officer at GP Strategies, is back in the virtual studio to talk about his article, Learning in Layers, the Molecular Model of Instructional Design, and how it's redefining the way we think about learning at scale. Matt, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Doing well. Glad to be back here with you, of course, as always. I know we're always talking about something new and cutting edge, so I know it's always about that stretch, but I love being here with you and talking the back and forth on these conversations. I just love it. So,
well, you are definitely a friend of the show. I've had this day circled on my calendar for a while, especially after reading this article. So for those that haven't had a chance to check out Matt's article, highly encourage you to hop onto the GP Strategies website. We'll put a link in the comments within the podcast here, but I want to just start with this, Matt. What inspired you to rethink instructional design at, well, the atomic level, the molecular, very small level?
One of the things that I think has been a big change, and it's a fact, AI is changing the way that we not only build things, but more importantly, how we deliver learning to the end user. And I know that personalization has been something that we've been trying to get to for a very long time. How do I create a very personalized, ruthlessly relevant experience out there for our learners? That is not just when the organization wants to roll it out, but it's going to really be for where they're at, what they're doing, who they're working with, what they're trying to achieve as an outcome, that element of personalization to get to that ruthless relevance around that. So the question is, how can we actually truly deliver what I consider next generation personalization? And AI, I think, plays a very big role in being able to do that. So as we kind of think about that, if we change the way we're thinking about how we're going to deliver that through the use of, like, for example, a personal learning agent that's going to help drive that personalization for me, we probably need to think about the design of the outputs, the learning elements, the learning assets, the things that we bring together so that their personal learning agent can actually come together and synthesize that molecule of learning relevance, whether they're in the first moment of a learning need, something's changed, whether they're trying to apply it, whatever that moment may be. Instead of us trying to build a predictable, like, I'm going to create a course of this 43,000 different variations, we're going to create the assets, and then the personal learning agent will be able to assemble it for the person. So we're changing that point of control. But really what's enabling that is AI. So where is this coming from? It's having to take a step back and take a fresh look at how we're designing and developing pieces out there to be consumed in more meaningful ways.
I like that. Let's dig into this idea of atomic design. I mean, in your article, you describe it as breaking learning into its smallest meaningful components, whether it's elements or atoms of knowledge. In your mind, what does this look like in practice?
So you think about being able to construct. So it's not just about a course. So the first thing I think is important is that we're building for a future state where there will be a personal learning agent that's available to me as an individual. So instead of Matt Donovan as an instructional designer going out and designing a neurodivergent version of a compliance course for you to take, your personal learning bot will actually be able to create that compliance course that aligns with your way that's going to maximize in your retention and your completion of it. You still need to complete all the key criteria. We need, you know, verification that you've understood it, but it's in a way that's more consumable for you at that moment. And that's not just the first time I learned about it, but when I'm actually trying to put things into practice as well. So what that's allowing us to do, that first premise is that that agent is there. And that agent is going to construct these experiences. It might be a piece of content, but it could also be a diagnostic. It could be a quiz. It could be a variety of things. So I'm not just saying a paragraph of content is the only thing we're looking at. It's all the things that we use to learn and grow and develop.
Okay, so I'm trying to go back to my academic days of chemistry class. I'm picturing the elemental chart on the wall, and instead of seeing krypton or chromium, I'm seeing job aids, basically freestanding things, right? I'm seeing videos, things that aren't necessarily neatly crafted into one single course, right? But you're saying AI has the ability, based on what I'm needing, to almost like a sandstorm or something, sequence or bring out different parts of it. Is that a fair enough assessment?
I think one of the examples that I was talking about is, you know, what's the difference between H2O, which is, Mike, what is that?
That's water.
Very good. And then what is H2O2?
I do not know. What is H2O2?
It's hydrogen peroxide.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
So one additional oxygen takes it from water to hydrogen peroxide, and they're actually used to achieve very different purposes in achieving our activities in life. So obviously water to sustain, but also hydrogen peroxide can be used in a variety of ways that when I was growing up, I know we used it like to kind of clean a wound, for example. But I think the interesting part is that the idea is, like, how do we reconstruct to get the outcome that we need to by being able to bring, whether it's content or context or a quiz or diagnostic, et cetera, to be able to do that. So I think that that's one of those things that we think about, is saying, how do I bring a couple of these things to bring new meaning or new value to what it is you're doing? It's shifting it to say, how do I create the assets so that it can be reconstructed from a learner-centric standpoint or content-centric standpoint? So I'm putting, my goal as a designer is not to design a course always, is now to create the elements of in a way that can be recombined into a meaningfully learning experience for the end user.
Okay, you know, first of all, I have to say, I love this idea of the molecules of relevance as this concept of H2O and H2O2. I can see what you mean. You've got the same core elements at work, but how you sequence them radically different. One helps you whiten your teeth. One helps you keep your hydration up. I love that. So that's perfect. Matt, I want to shift gears here, and I want to talk about AI's role in this learning design. I mean, one of the most exciting parts of your framework that you discuss is really the role of AI as the orchestrator. So I'm picturing AI waving the baton with some nice coattails on, something like that. Just from a high-level vision, how do you see AI assembling learning experiences?
So I think that's one of the things, be able to have a learning agent that would be able to bring in the right content and the context for what you're working for. So let's say, for example, I'm about to endeavor into a safe, agile project. Okay. Well, instruction on how to do it based on how close or near I am to the performance based on what it knows about me to be able to do that. And then you may also have somebody else on the team who's never been in safe, agile, and their personal learning agent says, hey, you're getting ready to join a team. You probably need to go out and get a much deeper backgrounding on this and much stronger performance support as that person is kind of going through. So you're not only meeting the needs of the individual, but the need of the team as our collective learning agents start to work with the context of the work we're doing and the application around that.
This is so exciting. I know for years, you're one of the lead pioneers of really discussing the five moments of learning and how we need to design elements for that. And what I'm hearing from you is, this is really the realization of that, this orchestrator where you come in, I come in, we're at different moments. Maybe I need something that is foundational. You need a refresher. Maybe we're problem solving. This is serving up information in real time to help us on our performance journey, right?
So again, this gets back to what I was saying before and how it actually shifts it from being content or org-centric in what I want to tell you, but it starts from the premise of being very customer-centric in what we're already working with and what we're already doing. So it brings that context into this, where I get to that deep personalization, so to speak.
Right. Now, I know that you have been one of the really the thought leaders around this concept of human plus AI, that it's a partnership. And I'm curious, in this orchestration, what do you think this partnership looks like, especially for L&D teams?
Well, I think it's a way in which we start to design and develop our output. So when we start to build the assets, we start to think about in the multiple combinations of how things could be used. So not only am I building something for the first moment of learning need, but I'm actually simultaneously thinking about when it's going to be applied, when something goes wrong, when something changes. So for example, you know, I may be teaching a base concept or introducing to a new practice or a procedure. And the first time I do it, I'm going to need a lot more context. But later when I'm trying to be at the point of application or something changing, I need a different expression of that base content. And I may need a different source. Now, I'm not just talking about connecting with content. I'm also talking about connecting with human expertise. So when I get to moments like 3, 4, and 5 around this, it says, who are other humans that I could connect with, experts in the field, et cetera, that could also start to have some of those insights to those problems or their challenges or help me get better at application? So it's not only making a connection to content or diagnostics or other types of assets, but it's also to the humans in the organization that can help perform better as well.
That is so exciting just to see this hope, something that we've been looking at as a holy grail for so many years, starting to come together, mixing this power of human and AI. And, you know, speaking of looking back here, thinking about the traditional models of instructional design, and I know you referenced those in the article, obviously with ADDIE and agile designs here, you make a strong case that sticking with traditional course-centric models is pretty risky. So from your perspective, Matt, what are some of these consequences of standing still in a world that's moving at the speed of AI? And moreover, how could this, you know, atomic design help organizations stay agile and relevant?
There's two things. First, I want to go back and just make sure to say that thank you for, you know, the acknowledgement of the work. I talk about the 5 moments of need. Obviously, I didn't invent that. Conrad Gobertson, Bob Mosher, those guys are the ones that started this, but I love the design and you see how I kind of weave it in to really, there's a natural relevance that brings that forward. But as we also look at the other elements that we bring in, so like the 5 moments brings us into a very learner-centric view with that. The shift from the ADDIE, which is arguable whether or not you say, you know, the ADDIE model approach to it, whether it was ever waterfall by design, I think it intimates a waterfall approach where you drive gates and progressions and we know what good looks like and we build that progressively to the agile approach of we don't know what good looks like because good can be many things as shifting to an agile. Now it's actually taking agile and bringing that very strong sense of not just design thinking where we're looking at that really identifying who our end users are, bringing in that emotional, that empathy understanding of who they are, but the many different ways that they're able to use it. So from our design, it starts to get more complex as we start to build the systems, not just the outputs, but the systems that enable the ability to meet such a range of needs. Because I can't predict all the ways that learners are going to need it, but I can create the system like an agent knows about you, how it can actually go find those elements of relevance to combine into a meaningful experience for you to drive the performance outcome you're looking for. So it's a long thing. So what is the risk really behind not doing these evolutions are? The risk behind that is that if you don't start making this shift, you're going to get further and further adrift outside of what is that personalization layer. It is hard to handcraft personalization out there. It is really hard to do that. And it's not sustainable. So when you shift this, you're starting to get to a better system that has a bit more capacity to be able to drive with the aid of AI to really start to achieve true personalization at scale. So we have to design the inputs that allows it. So if you don't do that, you're going to be stuck trying to kind of craft the variations or miss some critical needs out there that aren't uncovered. So in realistic, it's really hard for us as instructional designers to kind of account for and handcraft all the solutions we need to that are going to need when somebody says, I need it for this or that. We can't build to meet all of those. So we need that interim. So bring AI into the situation to be able to help do that at scale.
I love that. And, you know, I come at this from the content developer, the creator perspective. And I will admit that's been one of the things that's been, you know, secretly a little scary for me is that idea of saying, wow, we can personalize things, but we can't make all this stuff, right? But what you're saying here, really the shift is from owning the content to really focusing on this ecosystem architecture and building the system where content can be served up here individually. So from someone like myself, an L&D professional, a creator, what does it mean for professionals like myself to design these environments that invite learner agency or even co-creation where the learner's part of this contribution? Help me just see a little more of that light at the end of the tunnel.
This gives us a better shot at really responding to the true complexities of the environments that we're facing. Increased disruption, accelerating change, the ability to continuously evolve and transform. It is hard for us to keep up with the same production strategies we've done in the past. We need to think differently around that. The rise of AI gives us a very powerful tool to do that, but only if we think differently about how we start to build the inputs and the enablements that allow AI to help us deliver that true personalization. And I know I'm mixing metaphors a little bit. We've talked a lot about that atomic structure with it, but think of this as enabling us to deal with the multiverse of needs that are emerging out there. And it is hard to kind of keep it, you know, all the things out there. If you think of the multiverse and the way in which we've kind of seen it, all the characters tend to show up. They just manifest themselves differently in each multiverse. And so it's like, what is this and this? What's the rule in this one? What are we seeing? And we're seeing that there are some core elements that are going to be out there, but how they express themselves will be unique to the context that, in this case, the learner or the performer needs to have them in. So
I love it. As a Spider-Man fan, you're speaking my language here, Matt. That multiverse analogy actually helps me out quite a bit. You might have something reoccurring, but to use your molecular relevance concept, you could have the same essential element, but it's manifesting or sequencing in a different way or being presented. Where as a creator, what you're saying, though, is free your mind a little bit in terms of stop thinking so much course-centric and thinking more about how we can pull out those core elements that can be sequenced.
Correct. And this design approach really fights that thing. And I've said it many times before, I'm a recovering instructional designer. What I mean by that is, as a classically trained instructional designer, we almost get into this kind of power trip. And what I mean by that is that we begin a course out, we start off with those learning objectives. At the end of this course, you will learn the following five items. That's a very much a closed system. As a designer, I've created imagery and text and video and a quiz to ensure that there's a carefully crafted learning sequence, but it's based off of what my design is and my view of what you need to be able to achieve and perform. Now, that's assuming that I feel like I've got a really good bead on what your needs are, but there's difference from being a designer-centric to a learner-centric design. And what that means is that if I started to create, it says, I think you need to know about these things, but actually how giving you control with your agent to be able to create that structure that's going to resonate, boy, that's opening it up. You're sharing control. You're freeing it out there to say, I'm not controlling the whole pathway. I'm actually opening it up that you may have actually additional learning outcomes I'm not even familiar with. So it goes against some of our very well-honed behaviors where we try to carefully craft these learning experiences, and they will be executed as I've designed them. To be able to open it up is giving over control. But the question is, how can you actually ensure a great experience without controlling every element of the experience? That is a master designer. The person that can create the conditions and the environment for this experience to manifest itself and have great impact to whoever the individual user is, that's a master designer. That's far more challenging than actually going A plus B plus C and equals D. And that's it. This says, I'm going to give you A plus C. And guess what? It may equal something else other than that.
That's fantastic. I can see that this whole shift is really, how do we balance the structure of having a formal learning for some of these core elements, but then allowing the ecosystem to have flexibility to go where the learner needs, whether it's from a data-driven perspective or just what they want, right?
Yep.
Wow. Okay. So let's look ahead here, Matt. And this has been a great talk already. I'm so excited just to see where this is going. And quite selfishly, my role in helping be a part of this over the coming years here. So as we wrap up, though, I'd love to hear what excites you most about the future of learning and development.
I think we're facing an ability to start to be able to achieve things that we couldn't before. And I think this is being able to look at, you know, the spirit of what we want to get out of AI. So there's a couple of tenets around that, and it'll come back together. I'll bring it together. But the first thing is that all the energy and effort that we look at to incorporating and leveraging AI, if it doesn't create space for us humans to connect in more meaningful ways, not only to be able to perform, to grow, to share, to engage, all those kind of things is what we want to be able to do. So AI should be able to leverage us to kind of get back to the things that allow us to perform as humans. to be able to be a part of something, to bring that passion with it. So AI should be a freeing piece with that. My biggest kind of concern with this is that we can sometimes go back into the mechanistic details where we wrap ourselves in and we miss the bigger point. We start to look at AI helping us generate more crap instead of helping AI create things that enables us to create better connections, resonance, and relevance in what we're doing. We get so focused on the small parts of like, look at all the stuff I can generate versus like, look at all the relevance and connection I can create. There's a nuance, but a very important difference between the two. So I think what excites me is the ability to achieve that. What terrifies me is some of our historical behaviors of going back to on more is more.
Right. Yeah. We don't want to go back to the 90s where everything turned into clip art because clip art was quick and easy, right?
And clip art was everywhere. And we had, I don't know why this clip art is. Do I really need a screen bean holding a bag of money to reinforce that I'm talking about a budget concept here? Probably not. So it's like, I can get 9,000 pieces of clip art and that's awesome. That's not what we're trying to do. We are trying to bring in those structures of relevance, and being able to create those assets doesn't mean you don't get away from actually designing full experiences. You just create an open architecture that allows for a range of things that you couldn't even design for it to anticipate, that opens up that open architecture where the learners can step in with agency, with their agents and the human agency, they're actually able to take more of a direct relationship with the learning to drive relevance, to drive performance outcomes.
Very exciting stuff, Matt. On behalf of our global listening audience, I want to thank you so much for sharing your insight today. Please come back very soon.
I'd be glad to. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about on this.
The Performance Matters podcast is brought to you by GP Strategies. Together, we can create a world where business excellence makes possibilities achievable. You can subscribe to the show anywhere you get podcasts or listen on our website at gpstrategies.com.